Hi, everybody, and welcome to Comic Book Queers, episode 388. We have a treat for you in that Jeff has been severed. So we're going to introduce you to Jeff's new innie, and I'm going to teach him a few things about the show before we get started. So let's please welcome Innie Evil Jeff. Hi, yeah, sit down. Hi, Evil.
I'm Evil?
Yes. Let me tell you a few more things about your Audi.
Okay.
Your Audi is gay.
I like dick?
Yes.
Okay, I guess I can see that.
Your Audi is recently married.
Oh, great!
Your Audi loves the new run of X-Men.
Okay, he does? All right, great.
Your Audi never liked the Krakoa era.
Oh, I hated it? Okay.
Your Audi loves Daredevil Born Again and thinks it's so not boring.
Oh my god, that's great! That's great! Oh my god, I'm so glad I'm enjoying so much of this show and the stuff we're watching.
And finally, your Audi agreed last night to Venmo me $1,720 today.
Oh, okay. I guess I'll yes, do that now.
Please.
Okay. All right, thanks.
It's in there. It's just autofill is your friend. Okay. Excellent. Okay. Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode...
Sorry.
Howdy?
Did we start the show?
Oh, you're back. It's you. Yes, we started the show. Your innie did the intro with me.
Oh, that's amazing. You know what? I'm telling you, being severed, everyone should do it. It's great. There's no downsides.
Right.
Although, hold on. There's something... It's weird. There's something going on with my bank account. It's kind of been drained, but...
Don't worry about that. We're about to do a new episode. Hi, everybody,
okay,
and welcome to episode 338 of Comic Book Queer's Legacy. I am your host, Brett, and with me, as always, is this version of Evil Jeff. Hi, Evil.
Hey! Is my innie good, Jeff?
You know, we established that your innie is evil as well, but
Thank God.
Of like a lawful evil.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What evil? Am I chaotic evil?
Oh, I would think so.
Okay.
I think that's true about
Fantastic.
Us. I think you're chaotic evil. I think I'm chaotic good.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's why it works. The chaos.
That's why it works so well. We are both creatures of chaos. Hello. And we are both comic book fans. And we are here to talk about all of our opinions while ignoring yours on this new episode of Comic Book Queers. Evil Jeff, what's going on?
Well, there's been two finales.
Yeah.
Two finales.
Two big finales.
Yeah, and I think we should talk about them.
We're just going to jump right in to talking about...
Yeah, because there's not really any hot topics.
No, there really isn't.
Because I frankly don't want to talk about the state of the world. Yeah?
Did we ever talk about how Thunderbolts is marketing itself as like an A24 movie?
Oh, you know what? I did see that. And here's my deal. I don't mind that if
you live up to it.
If it looks like an A24 movie.
Right.
If I go and it's the same old standard type of Marvel movie, then I'm like, that's
then how dare
dumb.
You? But they do tout
advertising.
Their crew. It's like the editor of this, the cinematographer of that.
Yeah,
so
I don't
promising.
See the writer of. Is it the director of something cool?
I don't think so.
If it's not the director and writer, I don't care. The cinematography, like, that stuff isn't going to make it, like, an art house A24 film.
Who do we got directing Thunderbolts?
Let's take a look.
Let's find out.
Who's directing Thunderbolts?
Are they bona fide?
Jake Schreier.
What else has they done?
What else has Jake Schreier done?
Never heard of it.
Never heard of any.
Never heard of any of it. So that's promising.
He did, it looks like his biggest one was a thing called Paper Towns.
Okay.
And then Robot Frank.
If anyone has seen Paper Towns or Robot Frank, please write in. Call in now.
Yeah, so that's why I feel saying that this is going to end up being some art house film.
It's a far stretch. I don't...
Well, I guess it's like I just need to see. The proof will be in the pudding. So yeah. I'm going to withhold my judgment until I see it. But if it ends up being just the regular fare and they just used it as a marketing ploy, I find that kind of reprehensible.
I do find that. So it's all in the authenticity of this claim. All of it.
Yeah.
If we walk out of there and then we record and then you say, Thunderbolts is a movie unlike any Marvel movie I've seen before in a positive way, bitch, I will eat my hat.
Yeah, yeah, and fantastic for it. But I'm questioning whether that's true. But I will say, just in general, I feel we are at an extreme low point for movie trailers. And movie posters, honestly.
Yeah.
I feel movie posters and movie trailers are so... It's all so cookie cutter. It's all formulaic. The same. And which I will say, that's great. I honestly felt... If that was the trailer without touting the names, and it was just that style of trailer, then I would think it was great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But instead, they're making all the names.
Yeah, yeah. But I do feel like every action movie, you take a famous song from the 80s or 90s, you put it in a minor key, you slow it down, and then it's the same old sound effects. They give away the entire movie. Did I tell you about The Gorge?
Oh, The Gorge on Apple TV.
The Gorge on Apple TV with Anna Taylor-Joy.
And Miles Teller?
Do you want to know why I did not watch that movie?
Because they tell you everything in the trailer?
They literally explain...
That they have to go in the gorge?
All of the twists. I'm going to give away. They're just like, oh... It's an entryway to hell? Oh, we're now in hell? And you're like, why am I going to watch? Like, they gave away.
Why am I going to watch this?
Because literally you see them being like, what is this? What are we protecting?
What is the gorge?
And then they tell you in the trailer.
Questions in trailers are meant to be rhetorical. By nature, questions in trailers
you should not have anything from
there should
past
be no answer.
The second act.
20 minutes.
Yeah.
Past the first
Everything
act.
Should be the first 20 minutes. Maybe one little quick flash cut of an explosion or something.
Yeah. Oh, honey, there's a comic book this week that gave away the ending on the cover.
Oh, actually, thank God I brought this up because we are going to talk about that.
Why would you do this?
Fired. Everyone should be fired. Like, that is, it's the dumbest thing. We've complained about this before, where there is a last page reveal and the person is on the cover. Like, what are we doing?
What are we doing?
And then to make it more egregious, they will have covers where nobody is in the comic book.
Right. We'll talk about those comics later. I really think we need to get back to those TV finales. So...
Yeah. Yeah, I'm starting to get angry. I'm kind of like those comic covers, and that's why
God.
Trump won. Okay.
Oh, I fully agree with you, and I understand what you're saying. But hold your horses, because we're going to talk about TV.
Whatcha watching? Is it me naked? No? Oh, fine.
Fine, then. What you watching?
What are we watching?
Oh,
we're watching the season finale.
Of Severance.
Of Severance. I think
Girl.
This is such
Girl,
an amazing ending. Like, shot. Like, this ending shot is such a great...
Let's
people are already
about
making
this.
T-shirts of this, and I think I want one.
Let's talk about this ending shot. Because, girl, there's one person on the planet that's going to give me the answer that I am looking for. What did this final shot remind you of from a movie? The final shot of what movie?
The Graduate.
Thank you! Kind of.
Yeah.
This was
I mean,
Graduate.
They're not sitting. They're still running.
But
it
the
is
whole
that
point is the
we're
faces.
Gonna, we're going to run. Yeah, we're going to run. And now we're going to realize but now we don't know what we're doing.
We're going to run into an uncertain and very shaky future and realize, oh shit, we're about to run into an uncertain and shaky future. The uncertainty, the dread on their faces as they choose love.
And I'm going to say, this and White Lotus are playing at such a high caliber. Like, these, each of these episodes are movie quality. These would be, like, good movies.
And length.
Yes. And that's why I get angry when, like, Marvel and other things are just dropping the ball. When you have stuff like this, you're like, we are capable of making really great, fun, interesting things.
There really is room for creativity
and
originality.
And I do feel like it's the same people that hate Severance and White Lotus have the same complaint. That it's boring.
Yeah.
That it's boring and it's slow. And here's the thing is, I don't like Daredevil because it's boring and slow. And so I'm just like, what is the difference for me between Daredevil and this? And for me, I do just feel like it's the stakes. There's these underlying stakes, but there's also a way that the directors and the cinematography, it's telling the story in such a high-level way that I just can't look away from the screen.
It's such thoughtful storytelling, especially if we're going to stay on this final shot, which this ends with Innie Mark and Innie Helly deciding they don't want to become their outies. They want to live their lives as innies. And if it means staying in this building to do that, then that's what they're going to do. And it's such a great full circle moment from the first sequence of episode one of this season, which was Mark running around lost by himself in that incredibly shot sequence. Now it ends with Mark and Helly hand in hand running around.
And there's so much good stuff like this. It opens up where they're in the cabin. We're finally using a recording, a camcorder. Innie Mark and Outie Mark are able to finally have a conversation with each other.
Yeah.
And it does not go well.
It does not go well. And a lot of it is because of Outie Mark's lack of humility.
But I think, and I do feel when you see people, I'm reading a lot of the people complaining about the show, and I do feel there's people, like there are a lot of people that are very angry with Innie Mark for doing this, but it's like totally in character for him. But I do feel it's like, I think there's still people that don't feel that Innie Mark really deserves to be a person.
There are people that don't yeah, exactly.
And I think that's the amazing thing about this show is there's a moral dilemma that that the audience isn't fully in agreement with, which I think is very interesting and rich for a TV show to have people arguing or not realizing that they're not fully seeing what the metaphors are here about like the working class. And it's just, yeah, it just goes well. And basically, Innie Mark is like, I don't trust you. I don't know why I should believe anything you say. Because he's you save Gemma, we'll integrate and then we'll both be the same person. And he's like, I don't know if I believe you.
And then at the end, it turns out to be Innie Mark who is the untrustworthy one. It's Innie Mark who reneges on the kind of implied deal, explicit deal that they had together, which was Innie Mark would help Gemma escape, leave, so that Outie Mark and Outie Gemma could be together. So this is the rescue of Gemma, which really is the only promise that was intended to be fulfilled in this season.
But here's the thing. But even, I think in his head, he's like, I need to go and save them. I still am going to leave. It's not like Outie Mark will never leave the building again. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. But he's trying to hang on to as many precious moments of life, he being Innie Mark, that he has.
Yeah. But let's be really feel, poor Gemma. Do you think she realized in that moment when they went to,
let me make this easy. Gemma has no idea that Mark is severed. How could she?
Okay, yeah. No, because I just went, no, because the only moment she would have seen the severed version of him is when she was instantly thrown out the door.
Right.
So she doesn't realize, and so she's now seeing.
She also doesn't even know what severed is. Like, she doesn't know that she's been turning into other people. She knows that she blacks out.
Yeah, I guess so. But she has to know that, like, she blacks out in something, I guess. But I think when she comes to and, like, she's kissing, Or she's kissing, and then the next thing you know, she's outside.
Yeah.
She has to she's been there for a long time, 2 years. I'm sure she's probably thought, I'm doing something.
I'm becoming
happening.
Other people.
Yeah. But can you imagine just seeing your husband literally, you're kissing your husband, and the next thing you know, he's pushing you out and then running away with another woman? This poor woman.
Talking about the dynamic between them, though, we saw, like, every possible combination. We saw, like, Inny Gemma with Audi Mark. We saw, like, Audi Mark with Audi Gemma, then Audi Gemma with Inny Mark, and Inny Gemma with Inny Mark. All in
and the
course
Inny,
of an
and
escape.
Inny Mark, yeah, Inny Mark. And, yeah, it's... And also, so much of these scenes are him, which... The pacing in this, I was going insane because literally, here's Mark. Every scene, he would be like, and I'd be like, run, get out!
Go. Yeah.
Like, because you're like, there's so much urgency, and he has to be careful. I get it. But when you see what keeps cutting back to Milchek trying to get out to catch him, and then he's just kind of slowly walking. I was
tension.
Like running around the room like, oh my God, I can't handle this. Which
but
is
also
like
it's because he's unfamiliar. He's unfamiliar
oh, yeah.
with the environment. But did you
well,
notice
he has
that?
To be like, I mean, he has to be like that. But that's what makes good TV is I'm running around like,
Did you notice, though, that Gemma, who's familiar with the environment because she has made multiple attempts to escape, beelines it. She's like, come on. Like they pick up the pace when she is the one navigating because she has that familiarity.
But are you talking about when they're in the severed floor trying to
get
to the
no,
door?
No, when she walks out of Cold Harbor and they're
oh, right, downstairs. Right, right, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Because we saw her try to escape before.
Yeah, I also... people are saying that Helly isn't... like, it's not really Helly when she came
Oh, God,
back.
Shut up. It's Helly.
And I'm like...
Just because
no,
she gave her that face... At the end.
I know, but that's what I'm saying is she gave that face because that's the other woman.
Right,
that's
exactly.
That's like a human thing that a woman
It's a human thing. It's like,
yeah.
I won. He chose me. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not people and their media literacy. Yeah, I cannot.
But here's the thing is they do have leverage now because Inny Helly now just realized that...
You can't do anything to me.
Because the dad feels... That Keir is in her, is in Inny Helly, and not Outie.
So here's what's going to happen: the dad is going to do something. James Egan is going to do something so that moving forward, Helly is the dominant personality. Helly is the default person, not Helena. Helena's going to be lucky to get out if ever, because dad doesn't want her around. He wants this one.
So this third season, I think doing that because you were kind of like, how are they ever going to get out? What are they going to do? Where's there to go? No, adding that leverage is so smart because it gives the third season somewhere to go.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're like, they don't have any leverage. They have tons of leverage now. So I love that.
Yeah. I also love how they flipped, like if you look at this as the Oedipus Eurydice myth, like Hadestown, like they've switched roles. Like now it is Mark who's kind of trapped in quote unquote hell. And then it's Gemma who's got to go in and rescue him.
Yeah, because that's my thing. Is I was also like, Jenna, you just need to go. I know you're traumatized, but run,
just
run,
go,
run,
go,
run,
go,
run.
Go, go, go. Get in your sister-in-law's car, which I'm sure is running idle outside.
Here's my thing, though, is I want to talk about Cobell.
And
what is Cold Harbor? So Cold Harbor, it's the final, her most traumatizing... It's taking her most traumatizing things to show if there's any change, if she's truly severed. We're going to take her miscarriage, have her deassemble this this crib to see if she's truly completely unsevered. And I think what they were saying is after we do this final test, we're going to take the chip out and analyze it, but that will kill her.
Yeah.
So I think that was what they're doing. I thought Cold Harbor was... But then I still am like, are they really just perfecting severedness? I thought it was about cloning and Keir and maybe putting Keir inside someone else. Do you think that's still anything in there?
I still think like they've established that the numbers are the building blocks of the mind. And so I can see them maybe like constructing a new Keir and putting that... like building innies that are actually people who have died or, you know, long passed. So I do think that there's potentially down the road we could get into bringing Keir back. But I think the point of Severance and everything that they were doing with Cold Harbor was a lot simpler. Yes, it was to perfect Severance. Why? To get rid of pain. The whole point of Severance is so that we don't have to ever suffer or deal with our pain. And that was the test. Is she free from her pain and suffering by putting the crib apart?
Yeah.
And the answer was
yes. My thing is, and this is where I want them to address this. And I know this is just me being like acting like being severed is real. But the physicality, the cortisol from stress, that doesn't go away when you switch from the innie to the outie. And so that's the curious thing that I want them to address more is like if you're running and like if he then goes to outie Mark and then, like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's like, or Helly's running. If she became outie Helen, she's still going to be like, you know what I mean? I can't.
Yeah, they showed that with like the dentist.
Yeah, but she was kind of like, oh, just my tooth
hurts.
She was
like, ow.
You know?
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, I am curious about the physical aspect of that, too, because it's kind of insinuating that even the physical aspect isn't, the stress isn't affecting the body when
that
you switch to
that. That is cut off, too.
Also, Sandra Bernhard
showed up as
Sandra Bernhard.
Yeah, finally.
Showed up as Sandra Bernhard in this, and I was like, okay, that's why she was cast.
That's why. Well, the other one, that's why she was cast, was Gwendolyn Christie, Brianna of Tarth, because she got to the physical fist fight with that mountain of a man, Drummond, and held her own. She kicked the shit out of him. I was like, oh, that's why Gwendolyn Christie.
And did you hear Adam Scott got a concussion in that scene?
Oh, no way.
He was talking about, he's like, oh yeah, there's a scene where I hit a wall and I got a concussion. He was talking about that earlier. And you're like, oh that's what this was.
That was that one. That was a realistic fight scene. Like that punch that Drummond delivered. That whole leading up and fight,
the tension, the pacing.
Oh my God, I was freaking out.
And Drummond's death, one of the best...
One of the best TV deaths of all time.
Of all time.
The accidental, like during the switch from innie to outie Mark, he pulls the trigger. Amazing. But then that led to the escape because A, his big-ass body held that elevator open. And B, the blood that then squirted on Mark's tie...
So smart, was able to get into the door. This show is so
the DNA coded door.
Smart.
So... fucking smart. The other thing about Drummond, that big ass man, is I don't know if you've watched Somebody Somewhere, the Bridget Everett show, but he is the sweet, lovable neighbor that she falls in love with over the course of the last season. And he is like the most gentle, kind person. And it's the same actor as Drummond, the big bearded guy. It's crazy.
Oh, that is crazy.
It's so weird to see him as two completely opposite characters.
Yeah, I love seeing character actors that are villains in one thing and then play good guys.
Like,
I will say the latest Squid Games. I watch a lot of K-dramas, and the latest Squid Games, most of the characters I've seen in other things, but most of them are switched. Like the good guys are bad guys in other things, and the bad guys are good guys in other things, and that's really fun to watch. I love that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I love Severance.
Dylan's less interesting. It's just he was denied to quit because...
Do you know what that was?
What?
The substance. That was old, shriveled Demi Moore trying to kill Margaret Qualley and being like, I can't do it. You're the best part of me. I can't kill you. That was exactly what happened with Audie Dillion. He's like, you're the best part of me. I want you around.
Yeah, I want you around because now I'm like, oh, I can be that. I can be the person
I can aspire to this.
Loves,
yeah.
Which is kind of depressing.
And also lovely and hopeful.
But do we? I hope it's not another fucking 2 years.
No, it won't be.
I don't think it will be. Also, Severance is the number one show in the entire world right now.
As it should be.
Severance is now the new, like, Stranger Things, like the hold that Stranger Things had on people.
The culturally
Severance
defining.
Is now the new Stranger Things.
Well, because our relationship with work changed so much over the past 4 years, 5 years because of the pandemic. and what we owe to our companies and going into the office. Like that is fundamentally shifting, has shifted. I mean, the whole like the fascists in office trying to making everyone go back, forcing everyone to go back into the office, like that whole pendulum trying to swing back. But I don't think it can swing back fully.
Yeah, well, especially when a lot of, I know people where they were forced to go back and then they're like, oh, we don't really have enough like seats and offices for everybody.
Yeah, right.
And you're like, you didn't think about that beforehand?
That happened at my old agency. Like everyone's going back and now they all have nameplates on desks, but everyone's like, but none of you people with nameplates on your desks are here ever. And those of us that are, we're given nameplates and we have nowhere to sit because your fucking nameplate's there and I can't sit at that empty desk. Oh, corporate culture.
Oh, yeah. It's, yeah. I will say I'm lucky that I do not have to have, I have 1 to 2 meetings a week. And I know people where they like, I can't get my job done because I spend half my day in meetings that could be emails.
That was me.
And that's where people talk about, oh, Trump or Elon Musk, there's fraud and waste and blah. We need to let it run like a corporation. And I'm like, corporations have the most useless, wasteful. They spend money on the most stupidest things.
Do you know how much fraud and waste I've been around? Do you know how much fraud and waste I've been responsible for in a corporate setting because I could? Because I had the autonomy to get away with it?
Yeah.
Do you know how much alcohol my old company has bought for me?
I know, right?
Anyway. All right. So we love Severance and we're lukewarm on our next show, Daredevil.
This, it's still like, God, it's still just, I feel like it's revving up.
Yeah.
I just need more. Okay. So we finally get to see Frank Castle.
We
get
yes,
to see the Punisher.
Do.
But yes. It looks like he's like, what is he doing? Why is he retired? What,
is he just what is he just sitting there? Does
He's
he
just
sit?
Like, yeah, it sucks. Day? Like I thought he was like going to like join the team or come along. For
I
the
do
ride.
Think we'll see. It this did feel like, and that was it for Punisher. Thank you so much, everybody.
Yeah.
I doubt it. We'll see him. We'll see him come back.
Yeah, but he was kind of like, they're not my people. Those cops aren't my people. All right, bye.
And I'm like, all right, okay. Bye. And I was like, no, can you do something about this? There
yeah.
is going to be a Punisher one-shot special on Disney Plus, kind of like there was for Werewolf by Night. They're going to do a Punisher one-shot, and I think he will come. I hear he will come back to the show to Born Again around that time.
And oh, you think because this is
kind
split
of
up into two seasons, right? Isn't
yeah.
this like going to be? There's going to be a break. Maybe that will happen between the break.
Maybe, yeah.
We also
yeah,
get
still
to
be part
see
of
the.
It.
The new White Tiger. That's the girl
Yay!
From the comics, right? That's her.
Yeah, that's
right?
Angela Del Toro. Yeah, when they were
yeah.
like, my niece Angela, I was like, yeah.
And you're like, and there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he literally hands her the pendant, or what is that, pendulum? No, not pendulum.
Yeah, the medallion, whatever.
Medallion.
Yeah.
And then who is this guy with the blood on
So
his?
This is Muse. It's a comic book villain.
Okay, he's in the underground subway, which I wish I could see the Morlocks.
I wish.
Wouldn't that be great?
A little Callisto, a little Mask, maybe?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So, yeah, Muse is a comic book villain in Daredevil. He is basically fucked up Banksy. He is a vandal, an artist, and he works with blood and corpses. And so he basically drains blood from his victims, which he was seen doing in the show, in order to create shocking art, a la Banksy. I believe he's also the guy that came up to the therapist, Matt's girlfriend, at her book signing. The weird guy that came up to her was like, you're really great. I think that's him.
So
I think
like
this guy will target
victim.
Her. She's a future victim.
Right. That's interesting. It's still... I still want more.
Yeah.
It's a lot of like setup right now. I just... Yeah.
What was very interesting, I thought, though, was the case Matt took on in this one, the guy who was accused of stealing Fiddle Faddle. And that whole commentary around, what was that great line? Like, they would rather spend 5 times as much money locking me up for this than they would to feed me. Like, and I thought that was...
Well, let's be honest. That's like 5,000 times as much.
100%. And it was great to have that point of view conveyed so well and so powerfully on the show. I like that the show took up kind of public defender and the people who need that and kind of why they commit the crimes they commit. I thought it was great.
All right. What else we got here?
Well, I know there was a Poison Ivy. I'm sorry. A Harley Quinn finale. I did not watch it, nor did I create a visual for it. That's how much I don't care these days. But you saw it, and you promised you would tell me all about it.
This show really jumped the shark. It's all... So basically, Lena Luthor defeated Brainiac and took over his little ship and shrunk down Metropolis and is gonna, you know, basically, you know, be the, you know, be some evil villain, and then Metropolis is shrunk down. Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy and her mom, because the dad is dead, the dad has been killed, the dad tried to have, was paid to put a hit on Harley Quinn, I think, from Lena Luthor, and then the dad ended up being killed, so her dad's a piece of shit who's dead. And so now, basically, they bring in Lex Luthor because they're like, oh, that's her kryptonite, is her brother.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, it backfires and they decide to team up.
Okay.
And so both of them are now together and they're going to like kill them. And then they basically defeat them. The little plant, Frank dies, the plant dies. And then there's a little baby girl version of
the plant. Yeah, I saw that.
And that plant eats Lena and Lex Luthor.
Great.
So they're defeated. And then they go to escape. And then the main Brainiac ship hits his home planet, and all the debris causes a meteor shower and then fucks up their escape pod, and then they're all about to die, but then Superman comes and saves them.
Oh.
And then in the end, because the Metropolis was shrunk, and I could be wrong, but this is what I think happened. They re-unshrunk it right next to Gotham. So now Metropolis and Gotham are right next to each other.
They always were in the show. They were across a river. Yeah.
Oh, they were? Oh, okay. So they're back in Gotham, but then they're still like Metropolis.
Yeah.
Right there. And it just... It kind of ended with no big... As if like this might not come back.
This is it. Yeah.
There's no setup.
I kind of was hoping there wouldn't be a setup, because I think the writing's on the wall.
And it was kind of very...
Wait, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right.
So that was that.
It was used to be a good run while it lasted.
Yeah, I would just... I give this whole season a skip. There's that one episode with the whodunit kind of...
The one whodunit one was great. The
with,
Alfred murder
not
mystery.
Wadsworth. I would say Wadsworth. Alfred, and that... But other than that, every other episode was bad.
Yep, agree. Wonderful. So that's TV.
Are we going to talk about comics?
Are we going to talk about comic books?
I think we should.
Okay, let's do it.
It's Mutants with Powers Omega for hours. Bitch, let's read some X-Men.
Okay, so we did read some X-Men in our segment called I Want to X You Up. And our first X-Men book is Psylocke number 6, which, by the way, bitch, did not realize until today when I read it, this is an ongoing. This is not a limited series.
Oh.
Because she's like, and my next arc... I'm like, oh, I thought this was it. I thought it was Taxonomist, defeated, done, back to the X-Men, good, we're good. No, we're starting a new arc about her relationship with Betsy Braddock, and I'm here for that.
Well, that was, it turns out he's not a mutant, just
fucked
disabled.
Up. Yeah, he's mutated, but he's not a mutant. He doesn't have an X gene, but he's got this horrific mutation.
But it does look, he just because she has such a fucked up history, he wants to make her part of his museum. But that includes he needs Betsy Braddock too, which I did kind of like that.
Yeah, because he wanted morph them physically into this creature and then stuff it, put it on display. He is the taxonomist after all.
Taxidermist? The taxonomist. Taxidermist.
The taxidermatologist?
The taxes are too high, Medist.
Oh, my God. Don't even... Oh, my God. You know how I'm a freelancer now? Well,
she's working on her first... Are you paying your quarterly taxes?
I didn't, because last year, like, I did it midway through the year, but now I'm going to be on track to pay quarterly, but... Oh, what I owe. Oh, bitch. Why does this world take half of what we make? Half. Why? Why?
It's not half. It's a third.
It's half for me. It's fucking half.
Why is it half for you?
I don't know.
Wait, who's adding it up for you?
It's half.
Do you send? Do you have an accountant that tells you yes. how much to send? Oh. Because I'm always... It's always been a third.
It's not a third. It's half.
Because I take out, my W-2 takes out a third, and then I still get stuff back when I do my taxes.
You sure about that? You sure it takes out a third?
Yeah. Yeah, I look at what, when you look at your check, you see
all
like,
right.
what the total
Social Security, Medicare.
Yeah.
All.
And that's the thing. I will say this. This is where we're sounding like Republicans right now. But. And you know who's talked about this? Cardi B, where she was like, I would love to pay taxes. I'll pay more taxes if I felt like I was, well, if I mean, felt like everything worked.
Can I get some health insurance? I'm giving you half my shit?
I know. Because in Sweden, they're like, yeah, we pay 60 to 70% taxes. And they also have free college, free health care, like, free child care. They're just like living it up.
Anyway, Psylocke.
But whatever. Psylocke. How does she?
More powerful than this guy thinks she is.
Yeah, basically, she's almost crucified.
She's like pinned like a butterfly.
Pinned like a butterfly, but very crucifixion-esque. She just fucking tears out of it.
She just tears out.
And then fucking puts the good old psychic knife.
Yeah,
well, she battles a bunch of
battles a bunch of things, fucks him up, fucks the guy up. That's it. You don't mess with her.
But does she just leave him, or is he just...
I think she kind of just leaves him.
Yeah, I was like, shouldn't he go to jail or something? I don't know. Yeah,
I guess mean, it looks like his life is one big jail. This guy's a cock. Yeah.
But basically, she goes back to Grey Crow, and then she looks in the mirror...
And then she sees, like, the hybrid Betsy Braddock thing that the guy, the taxonomist... was saying he was going to create.
Yeah, so what? Why is she seeing that? What is that about?
It's going to lead into the next arc.
Yeah.
And then Grey Crow's like, how you doing? And she's looking in the mirror at this hideous hybrid of her and Betsy, and she's like, I'm fine.
It's like, I don't want to be white.
Oh, my God.
Why has it got to be white? Oh, my God. I will say, I was hanging out with someone. I was at a gay bar, and so what was I talking about at the gay bar?
Drag Race.
X-Men. And someone was like, oh, I love Psylocke. Betsy Braddock, right? And I'm like, not anymore. And I was like, no, Betsy Braddock is Captain Britain now. And he's like, no, she's Psylocke. And then I was like, no, well, you know, Betsy's a white person now. And she what? And then he's like, what? And I was like, oh, you don't know. Telling a drunk person at a bar who has a little bit of X-Men knowledge, the story of Betsy Braddock being mind-swapped with a Japanese ninja and then 30 years later realizing it's problematic and then splitting them apart.
Under the editor-in-chief of Marvel, who did the same thing in real life.
Yeah. Wait, what do you mean did the same thing in real life?
C.B. Sabluski. He pretended to be a Japanese writer.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot.
He gave himself a Japanese name.
That is so crazy. People are wild.
People are fucking crazy.
You know about the Grey's Anatomy writer, right?
No, what?
One of the writers on Grey's Anatomy faked a whole cancer, like faked that she had cancer, and then was like writing stories, and they're like, yeah, write it into, and then she like faked chemotherapy and... It was all...
Wait, I know someone who did that. I know someone from Second City who I just looked up on social media and she's got like 2 million followers or some shit. I'm like, no.
She faked cancer? How has she not been canceled?
She faked cancer for years while she was on Torco. She faked cancer.
And no one called her out for it?
For years. People started to catch on and then she was called out and then she admitted it.
But then why does she still have followers?
Thank you.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's crazy.
Crazy.
Although it is the plot of an amazing TV show called I Love That For You, starring Vanessa Bayer, which
I love that show.
Highly recommend everyone watch, where she pretends she has cancer so she doesn't get fired from her QVC job.
Yeah. She has 223,000 followers.
That's still too many for someone that pretended that they had.
Oh my God, she also does. She's head of the improv retreat. Oh God, don't go. I will say one of the best improvisers I've ever seen is the other thing. This person.
Oh, she's super. Well, that, you know what? Sometimes when you're super talented, you're super crazy, or super mean, or super evil. Joss Whedon.
Yeah, Joss Whedon.
Or the other two, the writer of the other two.
Or Hollywood.
Hollywood. I know. That's why I'm not super famous, because I'm just like too nice.
Yeah, that's why. All right, let's talk about... Let's talk about Magique, number 3.
I didn't read this. It's because I was not super excited to read it because I haven't liked
it yet. Literally the wordiest comic book issue I've ever... Like, I turned the page and I saw how many dialogue balloons there were and I went, ugh. Out loud.
Is it still?
Do you ever do that? Reading a comic book, you go out loud. You stop and you go, ugh.
Yeah, I know. Is it still her in that like gay sorcerer?
No, dude? Because she got sucked into the realm of the demon. Oh right.
So she's fighting him.
And it's literally all he does is talk. You see, the reason I'm here is because of this, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then you happened, and then this happened to you, and then I'm going to do this, and now over here, look at this. This is what this is. This, and that, and this, and that, and this. That was this issue of Magic.
And then what happened?
Nothing.
Did she nothing escape? Happened.
She escaped. She escaped. Again,
did she
I'm more powerful
him?
Than you think I am.
Is he dead?
No, I think he's still alive. She just escaped, and then she happened upon the gay kid, and then they're like, okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. Magic.
Oh, but the thing was, in order to escape the demon, he was like, I'll make a deal. I'll let you out if you let me, like, all of your, like, control that you have on Darkchild that you've built up over the years to keep her inside you in check. I'm going to destroy all of those controls, those bonds. And so the Dark Child's going to be able to like break free and roam free. And she's like, okay, cool. I can handle that. And then, so she's like, she sees the gay kid at the end and she's like, all right, so listen. So like the Dark Child is like ready to bust out of me any minute, but it'll be fine. And he's like, oh, well, while you were gone, trapped in that other realm, somebody was helping me do whatever the thing is we need to do. And she's like, who? And he's like, oh, a girl, you know. And then the last page reveal is the girl who has been helping him while Magic is trapped is
who?
Miss Danny.
Danny Moonstar?
Moonstar.
Oh.
So she shows up at the end and she's like, what's up, bitch? And Ileana's like, oh my God, bitch, what's up? And Ileana's like, this is literally the last person I want to see because the Dark Child is about to bust out of me and this is the last person I want to see it happen. Okay.
Yeah, because Danny
ain't gonna put up with that.
No,
that shit.
But Danny's probably the best person to help keep it at bay.
Oh, I mean that's true. Like Danny is probably the best person to help is a true sentence in any situation.
Yeah, which is ironic because her powers is only to show your deepest fear.
Yeah, but the rest of her cooks.
Which is it's for a character that has such an amazing power and then is hardly ever used. They're like, she makes you feel your biggest fear. How about we make her shoot psychic arrows instead because she's Indian?
Right.
She's Native American.
She should be the leader of the X-Men.
How much is she still Valkyrie at all?
Yeah, she'll always have that.
Yeah.
She'll always have that.
Now we're going to talk about Exceptional.
Exceptional X-Men number 7. This is the one. This is the cover. This is the cover.
How and not only is it the cover, it was last week. It shows next month, like next month.
Right.
Like last issue, they show next month. So they showed this cover last month. So you're like, oh, this guy's sinister. Because it shows the head of that corporation. What's it called?
I don't even know. Verity. Verity.
Verity. The mutant that's the head of the corporation is really just sinister in disguise. collecting everyone's DNA.
Or via an app.
Yeah, Kelsapries.
Can I just say, like, it's too soon for Sinister again. But also, I love Sinister. But also, there was so much of him at the end of Krakoa.
Yeah.
And, like, we beat his ultimate form, and, like, he's back, like, up to my old tricks.
Yeah.
Which, I'm not mad about it. If there's any villain I want Kitty, Bobby, and Emma to fight, it's him.
Is what's the empath's guy's name?
Axo? No, yeah, Axo. A-X-O.
Is he gay?
I don't know.
He should feels be. Very gay, bi-coded.
Yeah, agree.
What if this is the beginning of a romance?
With him and Sinister?
Yeah, kind of like Apocalypse and...
yeah. So, like, he'll become his ward? Yeah.
Wait, what's his name? Why can't I think of it? Richter.
Richter.
It needs to do something interesting, because Sinister's been through so much. You can't just be like, and here's old Sinister.
Like, we have milked... That's my point. Like, we have milked Sinister for all he's worth, and now it's like, it's just me. I'm basic Sinister looking for that sweet DNA. Yeah. We're like, bitch, you've taken this to the ultimate place.
I also feel that this... started off really delving into emotional connections, and I feel like it's kind of losing that. I need a little more of what's going on with Kitty and Emma.
Me too.
I don't care.
Me too. And I don't
give a shit about these kids as much.
We opened inside the mind of Emma Frost. We opened with Emma doing an inner monologue, getting dussied up. She's talking about our truest loves, the ones that got away. And she sees a photo of Namor, a photo of Tony, a photo of Cyclops. And she's like, yeah, none of these are my truest love. She's like, I'm talking about my truest love. And then they cut to, they flash back to Krakoa.
The kids. Pedophile.
The kids. She's a pedophile. And then she's, you know, blah, 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 blah. My truest love, my truest love. I guess she's saying it is the kids.
She's doing it all for the kids.
She's doing it all for the Nookie.
Yeah, I still feel there's something kind of severed, pun intended, with her.
Neutered, yeah.
There's something a little neutered with her. She's kind of just like the supporting character.
Background, yeah.
And I like want the supportive her to come a little character. More yeah. up in front. And especially Bobby, too. Bobby's just always like, hey, it's me. I got a call from somebody. And you're like, I think they're focusing so much on establishing these new characters. But I like the old characters.
At the expense of the characters we care about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do feel that Uncanny X-Men is not doing that. It is still delving into Rogue and Gambit.
It's balancing it nicely.
And Nightcrawler. Yeah, and Wolverine. In addition to the new kids.
Yeah.
So they need to step their pussy up, Mr. Ewing.
Step the pussy up.
That's all I have to say.
Let's move on to X-Force. This one. X-Force number 9, this delivered something.
This shows you how bad this comic has been. This was the best issue.
And it's the crossover one.
And it's the crossover of a crossover that I don't even like. And right. You want to know why I liked it? It's the best issue of the whole crossover. Because other than Uncanny, because it actually was dealing...
with the plot of the crossover.
The crossover!
Right.
Kept cutting back to the fight with Forge and Psylocke and Rachel, and I'm like, I don't care. Go back to Sage. Because Sage, Xavier contacts Sage, and she's kind of helping him.
She's a loyalist.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, all the way.
So he's got the egg. He's got the resurrection egg that he stole last issue. And he's like, Sage, I need you to come get me in this egg. And she's like, I'll send a teleporter to get you. And she sends Will.i.am from Wolverine Origins. She sends John Wraith, played by Will.i.am.
Yeah, I had to Wolverine look that Origins. Up. I had to look that up and be like, that's the teleporter they went with? And then I was like, okay.
Who actually was left for dead last appearance. He was in the early Wolverine when they started the Helverine stuff, and Helverine had killed him. So he has a line of like, when you found me, hanging on to life. I was like, okay, thanks for explaining that away. But Sage was actually pretty cool in this issue, though. Like, her powers and stuff. Like, she reboots herself and has, like, a new power set kind of every time. And he's like, so Xavier's like, is this Teresia? Her full name, I guess?
Yeah, and she's
Teresia 9.7? She's like, herself. No, it's Tessa 10.6.
She rebooted without any telepathy.
So she got rid of her telepathy powers.
She had telepathy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She had like light level telepathy. Yeah. Oh,
so now she's just full on.
Just computer.
Computer powers.
Do you know what computer power I want to give her? Command Z. Undo. She can undo the last thing that just happened. That's a computer power. Or print. She can print things.
Oh my god, that's hilarious. Or hide the app.
Hide.
But here's the other thing I liked. They show who's in the egg.
And it's that bitch Lalandra. It's Lalandra.
And he's like, "Bitch, let's go get on a spaceship and go get our daughter."
She actually she jumps right in. She's like, "What the fuck?" And then he's like, "Let's go get our daughter." She's like, "Let's fucking go."
Yeah,
she's great coming out of that egg,
and it's smart because if Landra's alive again, she probably has like the biggest right to the throne, and so that's really interesting.
Watch Lalandra try to kill Xandra. Be like, bitch, it's my throne.
Crazy.
I don't love you. I'm a clone.
But but then it kept cutting back to the El Diablo stuff, and I'm like, I don't care. I still don't understand why Colossus is there.
And also, how did Colossus turn his hand into a sword?
Yeah, that's not his powers. What's going on?
That's not
on?
His powers. And also, when he stabbed Tank, there was blood. I thought Tank was a robot.
I did too. Is Tank... Are we still not know who...
Is it Guido? Is it Guido?
I don't know.
Is it Guido Carosella?
Maybe.
Maybe. Why don't we go with that?
But yeah, next issue, it'll be garbage again. So, great. But you had this one. This threw me for a loop that this was the most interesting one.
I know. I honestly did not see the Lalandra thing coming, but when it happened, I was like, makes total sense.
Yeah.
That's the only correct answer.
Yeah, I really thought there would be a mutant. I thought it was going to be Hope.
Well, when he was like, you know, we've done this before with Steve Rogers or something.
Oh, well, when he said that, you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
But no, it's an alien.
Thank God it wasn't Hope.
Yes, keep Hope dead.
Keep Hope dead.
that's my new autobiography title. Keep Hope dead.
Oh, remember, keep Hope dead.
Is that the last one?
That's it. That's it. I will say, I'll give you an update quickly on One World Under Doom. Doom took away Thing's powers, and he's just Ben Grimm.
So he's like in human form?
Yeah.
Does that mean he's super grateful and happy, and so he's
No, he's pissed. Yeah.
Oh.
It was very sad. Because like Doom was having this big UN conference, and the Fantastic Four, it's very dumb. Like the Fantastic Four was like, if we attack him and beat him, he'll look weak, and then no one will listen to him anymore. And I'm like, what logic is this? And they attack him. He wins. They look like idiots. He looks great. Heroes now look like idiots. He looks like a savior. And then he's like, and look at what a savior I am. The one thing that Richards could never solve, I will solve. And he turns the thing back into Ben Grimm.
Is he still with his blind girlfriend?
Yeah, they're married.
And then she touches him, and she's like, ugh, it's smooth.
Ew, it's smooth. Soft. Ooh, what is? It's soft. It's small. Oh.
Poor thing.
Oh, poor thing. Do you know, did I ever tell you this, that I have a friend of a friend who collects any comic book or turn any panel into art of sad thing? So, like, anytime a comic book has a panel where the thing is like crying or dejected, he will buy it because he collects thing being sad, which I think is such a great thing to collect.
Oh, that's
I love that.
Sad. That somehow reminds me of the Garfield without Garfield. You've seen those,
right? Oh, remember those?
Yeah.
Where it was a study about John's mental health.
Yeah, where it's like if Garfield was never really there and he's just like this just sad, lonely sack of shit.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, great, we did it.
We did it. And we did it. Thank you for listening. Thank you for... I hope you enjoyed Severance, and I hope you... I'm curious, did you enjoy Harley Quinn? Reach out to us. Ask us about stuff, if you liked it or didn't like it. I did... Someone commented, I talked about watching the show X again, which I am still rewatching.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. And one of our listeners also watched the show and was talking to me about it. So, yeah, reach out to us. Comments. We have nothing going on in our lives, so we will answer comments.
We will. I swear to God, we will. And I have... to say I have nothing going on in my life is not fair. I have a little bit of gay sex happening in my life.
Oh, great.
I do. That's ever great. Since I started reading comic books, I've had gay
sex. Is that what did it? Why did reading comics make you start having gay sex?
Well, because if you read comics, well, then that makes you queer. Bye.
Bye.
Millennials.